Welcome. Are you ready to take a journey with me into knowledge, enlightenment, and discovery? Then let's journey again together. This is your host, Rebecca Jernigan, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Journeys with Rebecca. It is so much fun being here on BBS Radio, and I have another wonderful guest for you, Michael Jones. More about Michael in just a moment. You know, we're continuing to add new features to the website, so right now, on my homepage, you can find an audio from that in-studio EVP. Check it out and see what you think it says. You know, we're also in the process of doing some more EVP and reverse speech investigations. So hopefully, if Spirit's willing, we'll have more audio coming soon. Now, also, I've added some information on reconnective healing to the website. So go ahead, log on to journeyswithrebecca.com and check it all out. Okay, back to Michael. Michael is a Tacoma, Washington native. Just a normal guy with an insatiable love for science that started at a really young age. As a boy, Jones spent much of his time at a local observatory where he was fascinated by vistas of the planets, the sun, and various nebulas and star clusters. Mesmerized by this mystifying world, Jones set out to understand the world around us. Discontented with textbook cookie-cutter explanations, he quickly recognized that the accepted theories of universal principles are often saturated with illogical, ungrounded statements and assumptions that are portrayed as fact. He also noticed other discrepancies that have gone on unnoticed or ignored. Now, Jones argues that previously accepted theories are little more than observations of what happens with no explanations why. So, determined to study and comprehend the universe and discontent with the illogical explanations accepted by the majority, Jones became determined to unravel the true mysteries of the universe. The result was Logical Universe, a book that simplifies the theories and explanations we have all been expected to accept. Now, it's written in plain English. Jones offers the ordinary curious individual a satisfactory and comprehensive interpretation of the world around us. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to understand and enjoy the logical universe. Jones holds that the universe is a simple, logical thing and that a single force is responsible for everything. Coming up next, Michael Jones.
Schedule your private psychic reading with Rebecca, a truly gifted intuitive and clairvoyant, and the host of Journeys with Rebecca radio show. Call 1-888-958-2768. That's 1-888-958-2768. Where will your life's journey take you?
Journeys with Rebecca is sponsored by Fate Magazine, published continuously since 1948, with a broad array of true accounts of the strange and unknown. Subscribe today at fatemag.com.
More than talk, it's entertaining insight and discoveries. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca, and I am here with Michael Jones, who has written a really interesting book called Logical Universe, A Layman's Reality. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you.
And you know what? And I say this almost every single time. The conversations that I have off air are just as good as the ones that we have on air. And I'm really excited to have you here because I really think that we are going to really cause some people out there to think today and to look at life a little differently than maybe what they did before. And I appreciate, as I was flipping through the book, I appreciate the fact that it's actually a readable book. When we get into the physics and the science and some of the, you know, heavier sciences like that, most of us, unless we're actually educated in those realms, have a hard time wrapping our mind around that whole process, and the words aren't what we would normally use in our day-to-day living. So sometimes the concepts themselves are difficult to grasp because the language is written in such a way that we don't understand it fully and completely. So I'm welcoming you here to kind of put this out there and talk about your book and talk about how this universe, this logical universe of ours works in just everyday language. This is going to be great fun. And so I guess at this point what I'd like to do is maybe talk a little bit about what is the logical universe.
A logical universe, excuse me, logical universe is a book that offers a common sense picture of the universe that everyone can understand. It gives simple and logical explanations why many aspects of our universe occur, including gravity and inertia. And it explains that everything is always in equilibrium relative to the universe, which is the primary system. Everything else is a subsystem of the universe. Planets, stars, galaxies, you and me. So, basically, one of the core ideas is that it's not the universe, it's not the laws of physics that determine what the universe is. Rather, it's the universe that determines what the laws of physics are.
All right. Okay. Okay, gotcha. I'm following so far. Now, that's an interesting concept. That's a different way of looking at things compared to what we've been taught all of our life.
Well, yeah, often, you know, I hear told that, well, you know, if this law was, or this thing was off just a little bit, the universe would be different. I've heard that many times, and the reality is no. The thing can't be off because the universe determines that the speed of light is what it is, and that, you know, gravity is what it is, and all that. And, we need to look at the universe, the big picture, rather than looking at each little individual item and try and say that the universe conforms to that.
So actually what maybe a lot of the scientists come at this from is from the backwards perspective. They're trying to go from the smallest point into the biggest point, when really it should have been the other way around. It's a reversal of their, actually of what probably they've been taught through the colleges and universities and higher education learning centers, and even from high school as far as that's concerned. They teach physics in high school. So.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what they do is great and it's necessary, but at some point someone has to step back and look at the big picture. Say, how does it all fit together? We can't just keep looking at the atom and try and describe the universe by looking at matter.
Good point. I can wrap my mind around that. I can.
Now, gravity, you know, there are not just gravity, there are many phrases and words that are used commonly that people pick up on in the news media and in school that really give the general public a distorted picture of the universe. One of them is zero gravity. We hear that, you know, people talking about astronauts in orbit. And to my surprise, I'm actually amazed, you know, talking with people over the last year or so, how many people think that gravity doesn't exist outside of our atmosphere. And I think it's due mainly to that phrase, use zero gravity. Of course, gravity exists everywhere. And
okay, so, and you know, forgive me, but I need to interrupt you here because I'm trying to wrap my mind around that. Okay,
all right.
Zero gravity. What? And you're saying that it's not an accurate term, or
exactly.
it's not being defined accurately. Is there such a thing as zero gravity? And
no, there's not. It's
okay.
A very, very misleading term. Zero gravity typically is used to refer to weightlessness. When an astronaut's in orbit, he is weightless, he or she. But their gravity's still acting upon them. And so when you say zero gravity, it makes people think that gravity doesn't exist in certain places in our universe. When in reality, gravity exists everywhere. And our science books tell us that gravity is due to objects pulling upon one another. And I see that gravity is actually due to the fabric of the universe, what Albert Einstein called space-time, pushing objects toward one another.
Huh. Okay.
So just the idea of gravity even is really misunderstood by many people. Some people think that gravity is dependent upon the rotation of a body. For example, if the Earth suddenly stopped rotating, things would float off of the planet into space. And so just even basic concepts like that really need to be, you know, we really need to be careful how we talk about them so that accurate information is conveyed.
Well, okay, so that means, you know, and I've had other guests on this talked about different theories, different scientific theories, not this specific one. And, you know, in our history books and our science books, and, you know, really I think what we need to do is just throw them all out and rewrite them all again, because there's just, it's just filled with inaccuracies and fallacies and myths and things that cannot be proven, but they're accepted as truth. And this is one of them. I've actually never heard of anybody speaking about gravity in the way that you have. That's an interesting concept. But, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm kind of looking out, you know, like into space, and it would seem logical as I think about it that there would have to be gravity. Otherwise, how would all the planets stay where they're at? I don't know. You know what I mean? Am I making sense?
Yeah, they wouldn't. That's the thing. They wouldn't stay where they're at.
They wouldn't be stationary in the sense where we would be able to view them and see them through our telescopes and all of that.
Exactly. They would just move in straight lines with inertia. Well, of course, if there wasn't gravity, there probably wouldn't be inertia either.
Yeah, I think they might go hand in hand a little bit.
It all goes hand in hand. Yeah. In fact, one of the core concepts in logical universe is that everything is always in equilibrium relative to the universe, and that basically a single force, which is the fabric of the universe, is responsible for everything. So everything that we see and experience, all objects, all forces, are all different facets of a single thing.
Wow. That's okay. I'm not at a loss for words very often.
And you want something else that's kind of deep is because everything is derived from that single force, that single thing, you and I, and of course all your listeners, are all, of course, part of the universe. We're not separate from the universe. We're not separate from the planet, gravity, in the sense that we're somehow outside of the universe. Therefore, each one of us who ponders the workings of the universe is, in effect, the universe considering itself. I am the universe.
Oh,
I'm made from stuff of the universe.
Right. I just never heard anybody put it quite like that. That is absolutely profound. That's cool. Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of look at it like every person on this planet, and not just people, creatures too, bugs, birds, we're all separate, how would I say it, separate facets of the consciousness of the universe, experiencing the universe, ourselves, in different ways. It's really, you know, if you think about it like that, it's
wow.
Really puts you in perspective. You know, we're not an individual entity, or I'm not, that exists separate from anything else. Every plant, every animal, every bug not only affects me with its sounds and just the fact that I can see them, they also have gravitational fields that affect me, whether I can detect them or not. So we're all connected.
Well, that would make that makes logical sense. I mean, when you put it like that, it absolutely does. And I know that there's been a lot of spiritual leaders and mystics and what have you that have talked about the fact that we're not separate from, if the universe is a consciousness, we're not separate from it. But the way you've worded it is a little different, and I appreciate that because it does make total sense. And I like the fact that we're, you know, pondering ourselves when we ponder the universe. That's cool.
Exactly. And you know, it's not that there's a universal, like a large brain out there somewhere conscious of everything. I'm part of that. So are you.
Right. Right. Yeah. That kind of makes you kind of empowering, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
That's extraordinarily empowering. I like that. And I hope that there's people out there that will also feel the same way, that it's empowering to feel that way. That's very cool. That's absolutely excellent.
Yeah, it's really kind of, you know, as we go about our lives, you know, we've got constraints, we got forces from all different directions, you know, pushing on us, do this, do that. We can really put it in perspective and say, I am the universe, you know. I can decide what I do, when I do it, how I want my life to go. I can look ahead. Every action that we consciously perform is an exercise in predicting the future.
And that's a very true statement. And, you know, as a person who does, you know, readings for people, one of the things that I tell those, my clients, is that, you know, this is what I see. However, you can make different choices, and then this becomes null and void.
Because exactly. You know, we can look ahead and say, how do I want my future to be? You know, you might not hit it right on the nose, but you can direct your life in the direction that you want it to go. And it's not so much a vague thing as it is a simple matter of walking across the floor even. You can't make it from one side of the room to the other without predicting the future. You have to determine which way you're going to go. You believe that if you put your foot forward, you'll go that way. You're predicting that ahead of time.
That's very cool. It's a very simple, easy statement that you made that people can really, you know, grasp and hang on to and go, yeah, you know, that's cool. And then they can expound on that. So every time I get in my car, make a left instead of a right, I'm predicting I'm changing my pattern. I'm predicting I'm going to go here. Interesting.
Well, not just, and you know, you're just stopping at a light. You know, if you couldn't predict that running through a red light would likely result in an accident, there'd be no reason for you to stop. You just keep on going.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
So anyone who says that you can't predict the future, well,
you can.
I would disagree.
You can, yes. Absolutely. You betcha. Well, let's talk a little. I want to get back to a little bit more on the gravity thing, because in your book, you specifically talk about gravity and the warping of space-time. What does that mean?
Well, Albert Einstein, of course, coined the term space-time, and what he was talking about is the fabric of the universe. And he explained that massive objects, such as planets, stars, you, me, we somehow change the fabric of the universe around the object. And what Albert Einstein did was explained that the fabric of the universe was, or that space-time exists, and described it mathematically, but he didn't explain what it is and why it is and how it's warped. Logical universe explains what the fabric of the universe or space-time is and how it is warped by massive objects. It explains how the fabric of the universe is in motion, dynamic, it's in motion in every direction, and uses a certain amount of energy acting upon all objects. So uses an amount of energy holding the Earth together. It moves toward the Earth, acts upon the Earth, moves through the Earth, and out the other side. As it goes out the other side, it's a little bit weaker than it was before it acted upon the Earth. And so, all around each object, there'll be a greater amount of energy moving toward the object or toward the planet than there is moving away from it. And that results in an energy imbalance around all objects, what we experience as gravitational fields.
Okay. Makes sense. So when we talk about that, what does that do like... I don't even know how to formulate the question. I don't know how to articulate it. I know what I want to say to you, but I don't really know how to word it so it comes out in a in an intelligent manner. Here's a question. Does it flow in just one direction?
No, it's in every direction.
Okay.
Straight lines in all directions.
Okay. So if it's working all the time and it goes through an object and it comes out, if you will, the other side, no matter if it's going up, down, north, south, east, west, wherever it's going or around, and it goes out in a lesser volume, shall we say, on the other side, but would you not have the gravity going inside as it's exiting
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I believe I'm following you.
Okay.
The current idea that objects pull upon one another, and believe me, all physicists may not believe that, but it is nevertheless taught in our schools and in our science books. The idea that objects pull on each other explain gravity as a unidirectional force, meaning that objects only, or the force only acts in one direction, and that is toward the other object. Where what I'm explaining, and I think what you're trying to articulate, is that the force that causes gravity doesn't just move toward the objects, it also moves away from them. And so, and in fact, in all directions. So the force that's causing me to stand here on the ground right now is not just coming from space and pushing me toward the Earth, it's also coming from the Earth and pushing me toward space and coming from all sides. It just so happens that the strongest force is from, or rather the weakest force is from the ground, and so I'm accelerated that way toward the ground.
Okay. Okay. Now I got my mind wrapped around it. Okay. I had to figure that one out. I was like, okay, if it comes in all directions, it's not just a singular direction, then what happens to everything else? Because it has to go somewhere. And if it's, you know, if it's multi-directional or all directions, then it would seem like that would create, could create a huge imbalance there. But the way that you explained it with the Earth, and I can see that, because it's, okay, yeah, all right.
And the reason that we accelerate, again, like I said, everything's always in equilibrium relative to the universe.
Right.
So when we get in a gravitational field, the difference between the inward forces acting upon us, and that's the inward forces are the fabric of the universe moving toward us. The inward forces acting upon us from the direction of the planet and the direction of space, of course, are in balance. So the way that we keep in equilibrium relative to the universe is through acceleration. If we fall from a height, we accelerate toward the ground. If we're standing on the ground, we can measure the acceleration through our weight.
Ah, okay, gotcha. Oh, yeah, absolutely perfect sense there. Okay, gotcha. Well, now, what I'd like to do is kind of just stop right here for a minute, because I want to kind of set up for what we're going to be talking about. One of the things that I'm really interested in that you have in your book is about the black holes. I also wanted to talk to you about how the universe began. And there's some other things that I'd really like to hit on, because there's some buzz in the scientific community on some of this black holes, the speed of light, things like that. I'd really like to get into that with you here, Michael, in just a minute. So if you guys will stay tuned, we'll be right back with more Journeys with Rebecca, Logical Universe, and Michael Jones. Hi, this is Rebecca. You know, it's easy to keep up with all the latest Journeys news, my upcoming guests. Just sign up to receive the Journeys newsletter. It's free, and you will never receive any junk mail. Your email is never sold or distributed. So keep up to date the easy way. Just log on to my website, journeyswithrebecca.com, and at the bottom of the main page, you'll see the box. Type in your email address, and you're done. And once a week or so, you'll receive all the latest Journeys news. Fate Magazine is dedicated to the scientific method, to calm analysis of the known and the unknown. It is a magazine for the logical man, the religious man, for the doubtful man, for the observing man, and above all, for the man who wants to know the answers to those greatest of all questions. Why was I born? Where am I going? Who and what am I? You might call Fate a cosmic reporter. Log on to www.fatemag.com.
Hey, I'm Bonnie Raitt. Remember how excited you were as a kid to go back to school at the end of the summer? Seeing old friends, making new ones, getting new books in a new locker, a clean slate. And music class, that special room where you went to sing and perform with your friends and learn all sorts of interesting stuff about great composers of instruments and different kinds of music. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They helped spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. Know what? I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them. And make sure they get involved with music in school this year.
A back-to-school PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, it wires the brain for learning.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca. We are here talking to Michael Jones about the logical universe. And for those of you out there that do not believe that there's logic, or it's beyond you, you haven't read this book yet, and it's very good, and I hope you're listening to this conversation, because Michael does a really good job with putting it into terms that just about anybody can understand. One of the things, Michael, that I wanted to kind of chat with you about is I've got a fascination with the black holes, speed of light, that kind of thing. Maybe you can kind of give us an idea of what it is not, that kind of thing, according to, you know, whatever research and stuff you've done here for the book.
A black hole, as I was explaining in the last segment, as the fabric of the universe moves toward objects, it expends energy holding the object together and then moves through the object and out the other side. A black hole is unique in that it's so extremely dense that the fabric of the universe uses all of its energy holding it together. So you will have the fabric of the universe, or the inward force, moving toward a black hole from all directions, but it won't be moving directly away from the black hole in any direction. And so the reason that light can't escape from a black hole is not because the escape velocity is so great. It's simply because there is no the fabric of the universe isn't moving away from the black hole, and therefore cannot carry light away from the black hole.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Let's, they're talking, what some of the new things that they're talking about is that, a few years back, the scientists were talking about the fact that the universe is collapsing in on itself. Now they've changed directions and said it's expanding. Do you have any thought processes on that?
Yes, the idea of the expanding universe comes from Edwin Hubble's interpretation of blue and red shifted light from distant sources, distant galaxies. And that was in the 1920s. In fact, back then, what may not be known by many is that people didn't even know that other galaxies existed before the 1920s. And Edwin Hubble determined that these objects in the sky were distant galaxies, much like our own. And he analyzed the light and determined that the spectral lines are shifted toward the red on most of these galaxies. And that the further a galaxy is from the observer, the greater the redshift. And no matter what direction you're looking, the redshift will be the same at the same distance. And so he interpreted that as being due to the Doppler effect, which is the same effect that makes a police siren high-pitched as it's moving toward you and low-pitched as it moves away from you.
Uh-huh.
And which resulted in folks interpreting that as the universe is expanding. I disagree with that. I believe that that's a misinterpretation, that the blue and red shifted light indicates the amount of matter in a given volume rather than the expansion of the universe, and that the universe isn't expanding or contracting. It's flat, and matter and energy continually move around and change forms, but that the universe itself is doing neither expanding nor contracting. In fact, I believe that the universe is infinite in size. It's not like a sphere that's growing out of a Big Bang. I think that when the universe came into existence, it came into existence infinite in size and everywhere at the same time.
Wow, that's, I've actually tried to, think about that, the term infinite. And mentally, I just obviously can't get there from here.
infinite's a tough one.
Yeah. You know, it's just like, okay, so where do you stop? Where do you, you know? Like,
yeah, we can't really completely, well, we can't visualize it because our experience doesn't, we don't have infinity anywhere in our experience. And so we can kind of, we can grasp the concept somehow, but we can't really visualize what it is.
Right, right. So, okay, so let's go back to these blue and red lights. Would, in your opinion, would the movement of the planets in the way that they move around in the universe and the universes and all that, that could be taken as expansion or contraction depending on what somebody's viewpoint is for that time that they're looking at it? Is am I...
Well, like one thing that I really believe is that scientific experiments and observations can be carried out with the utmost precision, but there's always one component that's subject to error, and that's the interpretation.
Uh-huh.
And so it depends, what that person's background is. What did he learn in school? How much does he believe it? And what he, you know, all that he's bringing to the observation or experiment. And that plays a big factor in his interpretation. And that's why it's so important to get our education correct. If we're teaching kids these things that aren't correct in school, that's what they're going to bring into their mind when they're making observations and experiments.
Well, and now I want to get back to the statement you made that you said that the universe is flat. So I can hear people out there going, well, it can't be flat because there's depth and width and you know, dimension to it.
Flat simply means that it's not expanding or contracting.
Okay.
Not that it doesn't have height, width, and depth.
Well, that's what, I mean, I could hear people out there going, oh, the universe isn't flat. We're not flat. Yeah. So I just kind of wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, that's one of those terms that needs that often.
Yeah, because we think of flat as being, you know, one-dimensional, two-dimensional kind of thing. You know, it's not nothing. There's nothing in between it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, okay, so let's...
You know, you mentioned something about the speed of light, and I'd like to give you some information on that you may find interesting. The speed of light is approximately 186,000 miles a second. That's from here to the moon in just over 1 second. Now, speed of light seems like an extreme speed from our earthbound viewpoint. Many people think like that's just, wow, that's just, it's amazing how fast it goes. Well, I'm here to tell you that the speed of light is extremely slow. When you look at it from the cosmic scale, the scale of our universe, which is how things really need to be taken into consideration. You have to look at them compared to and relative to the universe. So the speed of light is a snail's pace when viewed on the galactic scale. It takes light 100,000 years just to go from one edge of our galaxy to the other. And we can look out into space and see billions and billions of galaxies. So on the galactic scale, light is almost motionless.
Interesting, yes. I can see that. Somebody said that, you know, obviously they're talking about speed of light, but they're saying there's things out there that are actually, that light travels or faster than the speed of light.
Well, light can't travel faster than the speed of light. The speed of light can vary depending on local conditions at, you know, in the universe.
So there is a fluctuation in that 186,000.
Oh, yes. When light travels, say light in space, in the vacuum of space, space is not empty by any means, but light in space traveling at 186,000 miles a second enters the air of our atmosphere, it slows down. When it goes from the air into the glass that your window's made of, it slows down even further. When it leaves the glass that your window's made of and enters the air in your room, it accelerates again to the speed it was before it entered the glass. the speed of light, or the speed that light actually travels, varies through, you know, all over the place.
Well, okay. So that kind of, the theory that speed of light travels at the speed of light really isn't valid.
I believe that the speed of light varies. Yeah, and this, what you're talking about there, I think, is general relativity that says that the speed of light appears the same to all observers, no matter what their speed or direction. Which, you know, I don't know that that's indeed correct or not. I do know that light speed varies throughout the universe. How it appears to one, though, is that's something that I haven't really delved into.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. So, talking about this whole logical universe, my next big question for you is, and I don't even know if you actually talk about this in your book, it's just kind of a thought for me, is about the whole time thing. You know, we're very measured as human beings. We have to have some kind of a time factor, which there's 24 hours in a day, blah, 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 all that stuff. Because we have routines, we have things we have to do at a certain time during the day, night, evening, day, week, whatever.
I do have a section on time.
Oh, do you? Okay.
I believe that time is nothing more than the measurement and comparison of the periods of separate events. For example, one day is simply the period required for the Earth to rotate on its axis one time. Hours, minutes, seconds are all derivatives of that. So anything that we measure, what we say we measure and how long it takes, we're simply comparing that event, whether it's a runner running down the track or the time a meeting takes to happen, we're just comparing that to the rotation of our planet, nothing more. Now, I've been asked, well, what about Albert Einstein's ideas of time dilation and that sort of thing? And I'm really not certain on that. What I do believe is that if time is simply a measurement and comparison of separate events, and events only happen because of the fabric of the universe, could it be that time slows down and speeds up due to certain events? Quite possible. Quite possible. And it could be that our perception of the events or the time elapsed changes because of because they're the result of the fabric of the universe.
Okay. That's interesting. That's interesting. Okay, so we are measuring it according to how our Earth revolves on its axis, how it goes around. But let's take a look at I'm not even sure how to articulate this either. You know, I have all these concepts, but I don't have the words for what it is that I want to ask.
It's hard to do sometimes.
You know, it is, because I'm not a scientist. I'm not in that world. That's not a realm that I've, you know, been educated on, except for what we learn in school and certainly what science brings out to us. But it's a little smattering here and there of things.
You know, what's also really tough is getting an idea, getting a concept into a picture.
Yes.
I have 17 illustrations in this book, and I read through the manuscript, and I made a little note by every concept that I felt needed an illustration. Then I sat down and started drawing these illustrations, and I'll tell you what, I'd look at them and say, how in the world do I make this concept into a picture? And some of them are really tough, but I believe I was pretty successful with it.
Well, you know, and you, I think you have. I mean, that's one of the things that I was looking at in your book. When you talk about these things, you have put the illustrations next to it. So at least in some way, the mind can wrap around the conceptual aspect of it to see the physicality, because we are pretty visual people. I mean, you know, we make judgments, discernments, decisions, whatever it is, based on a lot on what we see. And if we can't visualize it mentally, then some kind of a picture is good for us. And I think you've done a pretty good job. I'm sitting here flipping through the book again, looking again at all the different illustrations, and I remember when I was reading it, I was like, you know, I see that. I actually can comprehend that. Okay, it makes more sense to me now because I can visualize it. Oh my goodness, we're out of time. We'll be right back. You guys, don't go away. We'll be back with more of The Logical Universe and Michael Jones in just a minute.
For the people in our military, it's a time of sacrifice and duty. That's why all four military aid societies have joined together to form the Armed Forces Relief Trust to help military families cope with financial and medical emergencies at home. With so many serving overseas, the need is greater than ever. You can learn more and donate at www.afrtrust.org. A message from the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Close your eyes and imagine you're on an unspoiled beach somewhere, sunlight streaming through the palm leaves. A paradise like this isn't easy to come by, but it does still exist. Because the Nature Conservancy works locally with people like you to save precious places around the world, forever. That way, closing your eyes will never be the only way to get there. I'm Paul Newman. Help save the last great places.
Visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org. Nature.org.
Hi, this is Rebecca. You know, it's easy to keep up with all the latest Journeys news, my upcoming guests. Just sign up to receive the Journeys newsletter. It's free, and you will never receive any junk mail. Your email is never sold or distributed. So keep up to date the easy way. Just log on to my website, journeyswithrebecca.com, and at the bottom of the main page, you'll see the box. Type in your email address, and you're done. And once a week or so, you'll receive all the latest Journeys news.
Get your intuitive reading from Rebecca. Call now to set up your appointment for a personal and private reading at 1-888-958-2768. That's 1-888-958-2768.
Did you know you could email Rebecca with a question, comment, or even a show idea? She may even answer your question on the air. Email her at mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
Welcome back. And we are talking with Michael Jones about the Logical Universe. And during the break, Michael and I had a brief conversation, and there's some things, Michael, that you kind of wanted to expound on. So I'm going to kind of turn it back over to you, and we're going to continue on with this conversation.
Excellent. Before the break, you were talking about how the concepts, the images really help with the concepts, which, of course, got me thinking on our education, how we're educating our children. They get textbooks. Well, the teachers get textbooks to use, and of course they don't write the textbooks oftentimes, so they teach what's in them. And if those concepts are incorrect, of course the teacher is not going to be the one to change that. So the concepts are so important, and I think that when we're teaching our children, we're trying to teach them how to do the math and do all that to come to the conclusions. I had trouble in math when I was in school, trouble with math. I never really did the math and got the math. I got the concepts. But without teaching just the concepts, without the math, you miss a lot, I think. So I think it's important to get the core concepts of science across to our kids in some kind of fun and interesting and accurate way in order to have a scientifically literate population in the future.
Well, and, you know, and I agree with that. And let me, I'll let you finish up here, but I'll just relate some information to you. I was not very good with math either. I got the concept, but I couldn't get the practical application. And I remember when I was in high school, I took algebra and geometry. Well, in the algebra class, of course, you know, they have X minus C equals B equals whatever, right?
Yep.
So my teacher at the time made me come up to the board. He had this problem, and I was supposed to solve it. So I went up to the board and I started writing things, and, you know, I come down and he was looking at it, and he looked at me and he looked at it and he goes, "That's wrong." I said, and I was just mortified, you know, you're in front of everyone. And I said, "Well, what's wrong about it?" He said, "Well, the answer's correct, but the equation is wrong." I couldn't wrap my mind around that, even then. And I was like, "Well, how can it be wrong if I arrived at the correct answer?"
Exactly.
And he said, "Because that's not the way it's taught." And I said, "Well, you know, of course," we got into this big argument in class. And I was like, "Well, who taught it?" He said, "Well, that's how I learned it." I said, "Well, just..." And I...
So that's the only way it can possibly be done.
Yeah, and so I was like, well, because he kept looking at all my test scores, you know, and you have to do the whole problem out. You can't just give the answer. You have to actually do the formula. And I always got a C because he marked every one of them half wrong. So, you know, that takes you down, you know, halfway through the grading system. So here I am, you know, I'm looking at this, I'm like, well, if the answers are right, then what's wrong with the formula?
So each one of us learns in different ways.
Yes.
And I think that's something that should be a key part of the education is how does this child learn? He should be in this group learning with the visual, with the concepts, whatever it is.
Right.
These ones are number people. Okay, let them do the numbers.
Right. And you know, and you made a very good point, because our school systems, all of them that I'm aware of, and most all of them anyway, are being taught that here is the way that everything is taught.
And you know, every period of time, the prevailing beliefs, whether it's religious or scientific or whatever, but mainly I'm talking here about scientific, is perceived to be the actual truth. And anything else is heresy.
Right.
But then, as a little time goes by, 50, 100 years goes by, you can look back and see that the entire scientific way of thinking at that period was off. And now we're in a different one. And yet, in our period, we think the same way. Well, this is it.
Yes. And, you know, it's just like the measurement, the instruments that the scientists use to measure different things. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that may be the absolute for you in the moment, but what happens when we become, you know, more intellectual, more intelligent about this, you know, this hardware, this whatever test equipment that you're using, and we figure out that there's more to it than that, and we're actually able to learn even more. So there's no absolutes as far as I'm concerned.
And it's, you know, on that same line, our interpretations of anything that happens with light. Any interpretations of experiments that have been done in the past, I believe, need to be reevaluated, because even today, light still is not understood. And until light itself is understood fully, the interpretations of any experiments dealing with light are likely to be incorrect.
Yeah.
Need to be reevaluated.
And I think that the scientific community, individually as scientists, no matter what arena they're in as scientists, they need to take a look at themselves individually and go, okay, you know, I think I need to shake myself up a little bit. I need to look and see if there's maybe a different way of looking at this, because
yes,
I'm not absolute.
You know, speaking of that, the way that I look at gravity as being due to objects, the fabric of the universe pushing objects toward one another, that gives rise to the possibility of the development of artificial gravitational fields, something we haven't mentioned.
Yeah.
Artificial gravitational fields are gravitational fields that are developed through mechanical and electromagnetic means,
mm-hmm.
rather than a massive body. That's the kind of thing that we could use to propel vehicles through space at extreme velocities. If UFOs actually, you know, if they actually exist, which I have never seen one, but I don't deny it, I believe that with many billions of galaxies that we know exist, it's highly unlikely that we're the only ones. But any UFOs or any object that propels itself through space would likely use an artificial gravitational field, much like is spelled out in Chapter 3 of Logical Universe, the section on gravity.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I was like, oh, can you just imagine what that would do to energy costs? How awesome is that? Well, and, you know, speaking of gravity, though, you have a challenge And I don't want to run out of time before we talk about the challenge and also how to get a hold of your book and your website and all that stuff.
Well, the challenge is, it's the Logical Universe Gravitational Challenge. Very simple. I have $15,000 for the first person to prove what our science books tell us, that gravity is due to objects pulling upon one another. And the idea is that we've been taught it for hundreds of years, and it's in our science books, it's in our textbooks. There should be no problem for any physicist in this planet to come forward, offer the proof, and get the money.
And if they do, you just need to let me know, okay?
I'll be happy to.
I don't think that's going to happen.
And that's the point of this challenge. The evidence doesn't exist, and so I'm challenging what is written in our textbooks.
Right, the evidence is not supported.
Exactly.
By the conclusion.
And whether my ideas of gravity being due to the fabric of the universe pushing objects toward one another are correct or not is irrelevant.
Right.
What's relevant is that we have science, which shouldn't be based on ungrounded assumptions. Portraying an ungrounded assumption as fact and calling it science, that's not science.
No, it's not.
It should have no part in our science books or our science education.
And I agree. So I hope everyone out there is listening. Michael, what is your website address?
Website address is logicaluniverse.com.
Easy. Easy
Very
to remember.
Logicaluniverse.com. They can read excerpts of the book. You can order the book there. You can get the book at any bookstore. If they don't have the bookstore in your area doesn't have the book, they can order it. And you can find out more information about the gravitational challenge. You can also buy color prints of all the illustrations in the book.
Oh, and those are going to be awesome.
Universe.com.
Oh, absolutely awesome. Michael, this has absolutely been fascinating with you today. I so appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you.
And I'm
me.
Looking forward to any comments anyone would have on our show today. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Want to know what's on my coffee table? The latest issue of Fate Magazine. Hi, this is Rebecca. You know, Fate Magazine provides a one-of-a-kind reading experience. Published continuously since 1948, Fate is the only publication to consistently supply its loyal readership with a broad array of true accounts of the strange and unknown, from psychics and spiritualists to archaeological hotspots and fringe science. From authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations to readers' personal mystic experiences, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Fate's unique mix serves the growing audience of people seeking both answers and entertainment. Find out more about Fate, and to subscribe, log on to www.fatemag.com or call 1-800-728-2730.
I know how important a dad can be. That's why my wife and I take our daughters on tour with us. Tuck them in at night, tell them stories, and sing them songs. My name's Tim McGraw, and I want to say, it doesn't take a superstar, but it takes a man to be a dad.
I don't know why they say grown men don't cry.
A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council. Call 1-800-790-DADS for free helpful information.
I'd like to thank my guests tonight for sharing their wonderful information and knowledge with us. And a special thanks goes out to you, the listeners. Now, you know, the guests I have on air are given the opportunity to share their viewpoints or ideas. Now, you and I have the opportunity of choice in regards to those ideas or viewpoints. Be sure to check in next week for more enlightening educational talk and discoveries. This is Rebecca of Journeys with Rebecca. Until we meet again, where will your life's journey take you? Many blessings and good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.